talking to my people, yeah.
Your life running like a red disease. Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God.
This call is being recorded.
For all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history has a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you. Hope you have a great weekend plan. I know it's TGI Friday, and I know for many of our people, they are living for the weekend. Got a good some good weekend songs. Johnny Kemp Just Got Paid, and the OJ's Living for the Weekend. And one song is Friday Night, you know. So enjoy. Enjoy the weekend. I hope you have a great weekend. I hope that it is safe. And I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, need to do, have to do, must do, can do, should do, better do. And I hope the weather is accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, I know you got to do it anyway. So just get it done, brothers and sisters. Don't procrastinate. Get it done. I hear you. It is always an honor and a privilege and a pleasure to come to you through whatever means that you're listening to African Perspectives. You, of course, you can go online, tune in, and download the free app. Somebody keeps saying that the app is not free. And you know what? I did download it on a sister's phone free a couple weeks ago. In fact, it was during Kwanzaa. And then one sister and a brother said he couldn't do it. But if you do, if you can get tune in, then put in the search, Time for an Awakening. You know, tune in is an app for radio. And in fact, I listen to multiple stations on TuneIn, some Milwaukee stations, local stations, news, NPR, whatever, jazz station. They offer sports and stuff like that, but of course, I'm quite sure you got to pay for those. I just want to listen to whatever I want to listen to at the time I want to listen to it. You know what I'm saying? Yep, I got you. So if you can download TuneIn, put the search in, Time for an Awakening, and then every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time, you can listen to African Perspectives. Oh, any other time means that you can go to blacktalkradionetwork.com. blacktalkradionetwork.com, and you can check out the archives of this program, African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. And then on Mondays, I didn't get a chance to listen this past Monday. I wonder if they did premiere. That is By Black 365, By Black 365. Because they were also doing a video podcast and like a simulcast in conjunction with being on Time for an Awakening Radio or Time for an Awakening Media. On Wednesdays, it's Revive with Sister PLC, Proof of Consciousness. Sister PLC, Revive, Wednesday, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern. On Thursdays, it's Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People. I listened last night to Baba Kambizi and Baba Kima throwing it down. Us Lifting Us. And we will have the Cafe Ulu opening up the end of this month with a grand opening during Black History Month. That's right, on Sylvan Road at Georgia Highway 166. Right there, you get off, whether you're coming either way, you get off, and it's right there. Cafe
Ulu, us lifting us. Very excited about that, and hopefully one day we'll be broadcasting from there. And, of course, if it's Friday, and today is Friday, and if it's 8 p.m. in the evening, Eastern time, then it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. I'm quite sure he has some exciting guests and information for us. Saturday, tomorrow, SST, that's Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, and that's 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. Talked with Dr. Rogers yesterday. We're still trying to get it together, and we will. Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it is Revive with Sister POC, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., and it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And there are more programs to come. I want to thank Brother Paul from the U.K., who, when he called in, became my guest. And we had good conversation and listened to Time for an Awakening last Sunday. And he talked about a program coming out of the U.K., which is outstanding. I look forward to that and look forward to talking with the brothers and sisters from the U.K. and sharing the situation that we're all experiencing. And that is European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege, which is a global phenomenon that has affected everybody. I'm going to deal with that because I just can't, you know, I don't talk about Trump too much. In fact, I hardly talk about Trump at all. I did once he got elected, but I have to because of what he said about the other countries. And I don't use profanity on this program either because, you know, if you listen to this program, I always say I don't use profanity and I don't give my opinion because my opinion is profane. I cuss. If anybody knows me, I cuss. In fact, my daughter, she used to say, yeah, I remember that Gladys Knight song. My daddy could swear, I declare. He couldn't read it right, but boy, could he cuss. And so I don't give my opinion because, so what I do is I give the perspective and the opinions of our scholars. I ain't talking about Negro, I'm talking about warrior scholars, Dr. John Henry Clark, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, contemporaries of Marimba Ani, those individuals, Dr. Wade Nobles and so forth. I give those perspectives. So I don't give you my opinion. I give you the opinion of those brothers and sisters who truly have the best interests of African people at heart. So I'm going to talk about that, and of course, other things. And, of course, you can join me by dialing 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832 is our number, and you can give your African respect. We have a caller already. Okay, and that's a good sign. Extension 914. Good morning.
Peace and blessings. Peace and blessings.
Oh.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam, dear brother. Brother Joseph Muhammad.
Good to hear you, Brother Oshie. Thank you, brother, for doing what you do. I told you I would try my best to get on your show. I'm about a week or two or three late, but all praise is due to Allah.
All right. Well, thank you, man. Better late than never, brother. You know that.
Yes, sir, beloved. I thank you for your opening, your libations. That was refreshing to the soul. And certainly we want to give honor to those on whose shoulders we stand and on whose wings we fly. So, you know, I don't know too many who do it better, brother. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I appreciate that.
I just called, brother, just to say thank you for being my brother and to encourage you to keep up the good work that you do in terms of putting positive vibrations on the airwaves. Because Almighty God, Allah knows we need that now more than ever, sir.
Yes, we do. And I know that I am not alone in helping to try to raise the consciousness of our people. And consciousness is more than just awareness, just as I say in the opening. It is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally, and you embrace that. Just like Dr. John Henry Clark says, and you can see that visibly today around the globe, we have no friends.
European Caucasians extremism. I used to say racism. Excuse me, supremacy. But the brother from UK said, no, they are not. And he threw that in, and I said, you know what? You're right. I'm going to use that particular phrase. European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is a global phenomenon, and it has caused deep pain for us as an African people, because everywhere around the globe we are being mistreated. Dark-skinned people are being relegated to subservient positions or lowest on the economic scale. And so, to me, I love Dr. John Henry Clark. He said, look in the mirror. We have no friends. You want a friend? Look in the mirror. And don't leave that mirror until you like what you see. He wasn't talking about your hairstyle or how your eyebrows are arched or the shape of your nose. He was saying, look, love what you see in that mirror, who you are as a human being, who you are as an African, who you are culturally. That's, you know, and so that's what I'm saying to our people all the time, that we must begin to respect and love each other, trust one another, and work with one another. That is our only salvation. So how you been, Brother Muhammad?
I'm grateful, brother. In this dark hour that we're living, brother, you know, even though it's cloudy outside, we know the sun still exists above the clouds. So I'm just happy, brother, to be alive and to be conscious, brother, to the degree I am. And, you know, to the degree that we are, that for me, it just brings about a higher level of humility. So I just try to remain humble, try to, you know, do for the least of these, realizing that somebody has done for me that I could be where I am. Grateful for, you know, my wife, my children, my grandchildren, my family. And, you know, I just try to stay rising above emotion into the thinking of, you know, as you say, consciousness, brother, proper reasoning, into the thinking of the Most High, brother, because if you don't, in my humble opinion, you just get caught up in the madness, brother.
That's right. That's right.
You know, you use Dr. John Henry Clark. Praise be to God for that brother. May Allah be pleased with him for all that he did and all he continues to do, and those who were his students, I being one myself. And when you talk about looking in the mirror, you know, and tapping into not just your physical appearance, but go deeper,
yes,
you know,
yes,
into the gifts that we've been given. I can't help but to think of the lyrics of another ancestor, Michael Jackson, who would say, I'm looking at the man in the mirror.
Yes.
I'm asking him to change his ways.
Yes.
No message could have been any clearer. If you want to make the world a better place, take a look at yourself, make a change. You know, that's really what it's all about.
That's what it is.
Knowledge of self.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get it, you're obligated to make a change.
Yeah.
I know many of our Christian brothers and sisters say, to whom much is given, much is required and much is expected. Yeah. So after you take a look at yourself, I think it's the hip hop artist, another ancestor, Brother Guru, who used to rap for Gangstar. He had a lyric out that said, take a look at yourself. Take a look at yourself. Take one good look. Take a look at yourself. And so once we do that, then we're obligated to do something about that.
That's
so I'm
right.
Just trying to be like you, brother, on your team, trying to do something about it, brother.
That's
in the
right.
Midst of the madness, because we know, you know, I was just telling my wife last night that as I was out in the community yesterday in Norfolk, Virginia, you could see the pain on our people, you know, whether it's through obesity, you can see the
yes.
pain, whether or not they're smoking, you can see the pain, whether or not they're dyeing their hair in all the colors of the rainbow in an effort to make them feel better and look better. You can see the pain on our
yes.
people.
Yes.
So those of us who have that consciousness, brother, we're obligated to touch base with our people,
yes.
you know, meet them where they are, but then, you know, lift them.
Right.
Where
elevate
Almighty
them.
God Allah wants them to be.
Exactly. Elevate them. In fact, when you mentioned that, it reminded me of a Muslim saying, no one can truly be a believer until they love for their brother what they love for themselves.
That's right.
You know, and that's the thing, that
We live, though, in America, and America is about individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. And not just America, mm-hmm. that pretty much is a Western or Caucasian mindset. In fact, I've often said that individualism is a European or Caucasian desire. I think, therefore, I am. You know, the top of the heap. They always have that pyramid. Somebody's got to be on the top, numero uno, you know. But collectivism is an African need and an imperative. It is a must. And we are a collective people, you see. And but yet, because we've been in this madness for so many centuries, our mindset is that way. We think just the way they do. And then when things don't go the way that we feel that they should go, especially since Trump is in office, then we're upset, you know, and we try to rush. Why did it happen? You know, how can this be? How can we be treated like this day and age in 2016, like it's 1619, you know? Which, of course, that's next year. That'd be technically, supposedly, because I know some say we got here in 1555 and some say 1619. But let's use 1619. 400 years next year that we would have been here. And I really would love for our people to make an assessment, an honest, true assessment of where we are as a people, not individually, as a people, where we are. And especially in light of all the things that have been happening to us, you know. So I really would love for us to do that. And not just here in America, but globally. Where are we as a people, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, brother, you know, in listening to you, it reminded me of, I first heard Malcolm X say this quote, but then I later studied that he got the quote from the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who said, of all of our studies, history is best qualified and most attractive to reward our research. Goes on to say that, you know, history acts also as a springboard for our actions, something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing that,
sure,
that last statement. But, you know, again, of what we are doing to examine ourselves, analyze ourselves, and correct ourselves, what we do in terms of examining what's happening in America and abroad, analyzing it. I mean, has anything been different
No.
in the last 400 years?
No.
You know?
Yeah.
The difference is, you know, in the way they used to stay in the hood, we drank the Kool-Aid. We believe that, you know, the civil rights movement saved us as a people. But before the civil rights movement was the Jim Crow movement. And before that, yeah, you had the little Reconstruction period after the Civil War, but yet prior to that, you had that enslavement process, whether you're using 1619, Jamestown, Virginia as a benchmark, or 1555. So, you know, we have to really check ourselves to see if, you know, we drank the Kool-Aid, because there never has really been a difference. As our dear sister said, who wrote the book, The New Jim Crow.
Yeah.
Michelle Alexander.
Yeah.
Prison industrial complex is that. And we have more of our brothers and sisters, our cousins, our uncles, our play cousins, victims of the prison industrial complex, than we had enslaved, you see?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what we are seeing both in America and, as you just said, globally too. What was that conference? Nicene Conference?
Nicene Conference, 325 AD.
Where they chopped up the motherland?
Oh, no, that's the Berlin Conference of 1884-85. The Berlin Conference.
Right, so that was Berlin.
That was Berlin.
Then it was the other conference,
yeah.
You know, where, you know, it's same game with another name, as the last poets used to say.
Yep.
So we really got to check ourselves to see. And in fact, you know, in reflecting on, I guess, what is I see across the media, these statements this man apparently made, then what else is new?
Really? Really? I'm going to read an article from the New York Times on that, you know, what he stated and how it really is shouldn't be no surprise at all. We should not be shocked at anything that this man has said. But I think what we really need to do is understand the fact that he is not an aberration. And I know there are many of us who don't want what he said and how he's doing to be a normalcy. But damn it, it has been and it is. Because I think what happened, Brother Muhammad, that because of the civil rights piece and all of the legislation and the fact that many of us became into the government on a local, state, and federal level, that there was an illusion of inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And then we thought that this progress, this is so-called progress that was made, that it will continue, and that we as a people would show to Caucasians our humanity and that they would respect that, that they would kick to the curb their racist mindset and their belief in our inferiority. No, because they suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe that they're superior, and even though there's so much evidence and proof that they are not, they dismiss it, they reject it, because it makes them so uncomfortable. So even though, like Dr. Sheikhan Jop in 1974 in Cairo, he said, I can prove to you that the ancient Kemetic or ancient Egyptian people were African, dark-skinned, melanated. The smoking gun for that was that he developed a melanin dosage test where he could extract the melanin from the mummies. That's why they never allowed him to have the mummies initially for some time until finally he was able to do this. I can prove to you that the people of ancient Kemet were very melanated. But the bottom line to even that, Brother Muhammad, is that the ancient Kemetic people showed us on the walls, in the reliefs, in the scrolls, in the Medu Netra or hieroglyphs, they showed us. But yet today, even though that was 1974, yet today, because of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, they still show ancient Kemet. If you watch A&E, National Geographic, PBS, or whatever, if they show a dramatization or illustration of ancient Egypt, the people are going to be Caucasian. But if they showed somebody serving somebody, exactly, they're going to be dark-skinned. They're going to be melanated. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they want to continue to put into your mind that you ain't never been nothing but a slave, nothing but a servant, and nothing could be furthest from the truth. You know?
If at first they can't convince you, they try to confuse you, abuse you, misuse you, and then accuse you of being this and that.
That's right.
You see? Mm-hmm. I mean, our dear sister, You called her name, I believe, on the libations, Dr. Frances Cress Welsing.
Yes.
And, you know, she would quote her teacher, Dr. Neely Fuller, who would say, if you don't understand this white supremacy, then everything else you think you understand will only confuse you.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at what they've controlled over the past 400 years or even 6,000 years, economics, our activities of daily living,
yes,
entertainment, right?
Right.
Education, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. Then, again, you know, should we really be surprised when the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that the white man, the Caucasian, was the devil of your scripture? Yeah, it was shock treatment, but nobody ever called him a liar.
Yeah. Yeah. Because
devil being defined as one who is grafted from the original man who you talked about was blessed to leave as signs and symbols of the Medu Netra on the walls that were telling us from the very beginning, man, know thyself.
That's right.
Was telling us from the very beginning, heaven lies in the womb of a mother, of a woman, was telling us from the beginning, not this hocus pocus. But again, brother, we kind of have drank the Kool-Aid, too many of us. And so one thing we can say about those folks as the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said this, he said that our current president will unravel the layers of the onion, show us that he represents a people who think just like him. And you'll see people who, as you know, we have seen, that have no money, that are on welfare, but think that they're better just because of the color of their skin.
That's right.
Because of, you know, what they think they're privileged to.
Right.
It's really a crime, but we're not going to spend too much time on them. The point is, our people don't understand even today. You know, that's the root of why we're not united. We give them too much credit. What'd you say? Illusion of inclusion, brother.
That's right.
That's deep.
And
that's deep, brother Ocean. I know I'm preaching to the choir, but you know, we love having this kind of dialogue, brother.
Oh, we always
airwaves or in each other's presence, and we just pray that your listening audience is in accord, and or, you know, if they have any questions, comments, or concerns, I know you welcome them.
Oh, you know, I always do.
Studio as well.
You know it always. They call 215-490-9832 to join this conversation. On the line with me is Brother Joseph Muhammad, former president of the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters, a firefighter for about, 25 years in, up there in New York?
Yeah, I ended up doing 29.
Yes, sir. And now he's retired and living in Norfolk, Virginia. I called him a couple of weeks ago because y'all know the weather was bad all around the country. And it had, what, about a foot of snow in Norfolk?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I had to call my brother to make sure that he and the family were doing okay in that situation. And, of course, he has a radio program on Fridays on Blog Talk, Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. Are you still on from 4 to 6 Eastern Time?
Yes, sir, beloved.
Okay.
And we welcome your listening audience to tune in every Friday from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. You can log on to Blog Talk Radio / Black Hole Radio, Hole spelled W-H-O-L-E, Black Hole Radio, and then / Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. And or you can call area code 563-999-3089. Again, that's area code 563-999-3089. And again, Brother Oshi, we thank you, brother, for, I know you've made announcements in the past of our program, and we're eternally grateful, brother, for you sharing that with your listening audience.
Always. I'm always trying to, I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday trying to put something on our minds, trying to help elevate and raise our consciousness and our awareness, our understanding, and our commitment to one another, and to prepare us for what is coming ahead, you know, whether it's the weather or whether it's politics or whatever it is, because I'm hoping that before I expire, that I can see that we as a people, African people, are coming together to do for themselves, that are embracing brothers and sisters on the continent and throughout the diaspora to come together to do something for themselves. And they're not drinking the Kool-Aid of selfishness, of greediness. They're not doing it.
You know what, brother, too? I appreciate you for that, because the last time I think I mentioned to you, I did tune into your program about a month or so ago, but I didn't have a chance to really get in. But I was listening to you on that particular show you had. You were kind of talking about the disconnect between the leadership in the quote-unquote conscious community. But you took the approach of, you know, bringing healing to it and understanding versus spending too much time on whatever the conflict was. And shortly after that, it appeared to me, just based on the information I was getting, that there were some other things that were happening in terms of conflict in the conscious community, or people who classify themselves in the leadership position. Only because I don't know, and you have a greater, listening audience that may be a part of you know, listening to that mindset. What's the update of the landscape, if you will, brother? Because I really don't know, and I know you would probably know more than I. I hope you don't mind me asking you that question.
No. In terms of, I'm sorry. What did you? What's the landscape?
Well, just I don't know whether it's Dr. Umar seems to be a target. But I heard something about Cornel West. I heard something about Boyce Watkins. I heard something about Brother Sarnetta. I really don't know.
Well, let me just say this, brother.
To get clarity. And sure. You don't. I mean, it's to our benefit not to believe everything you hear on social media.
That's for sure.
In terms of people who have opinions, that's like a gluteus maximus. Everybody has one.
Exactly.
So I know You got your finger on the pulse of things as it relates to that. So I was just trying to see if I could get an update from you.
Sure.
And again, my whole intention is to bring healing to it or a higher level of understanding if there is even any conflict.
Well, unfortunately, that there is. And there's, unfortunately, pettiness, envy, jealousy, ignorance, stupidity. A whole myriad of malaise. And the recent, of course, is with Umar Johnson. He did go in front of the Pennsylvania board, and he feels pretty good. If you can see that, it's on YouTube. Or, in fact, it was on News One Now's stream that they put on every day or so, what happened to Dr. Umar in that situation. But he also has now a tete-a-tete with Tariq Nasheed, who produced the Hidden Colors series. And
right.
And of course they're battling with each other, which is ugly, you know, and I had an opportunity to talk to Dr. Umar, and I said to him that, you got to scrap, get out of these beasts, stay focused, and stay, have integrity, stay transparent. If they're, develop a board to deal with the school, And so it doesn't look like it's just you, because there may be some hints of impropriety, and you can't argue about that, because that's one thing that's one thing that's very clear to me in our struggle for independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for us as a people is the integrity of one another and the commitment of one another that we can see that is genuine and honest and sincere, and to support that, Because, now, they're calling him a shyster. He's a sham. He's this, he's that. And, of course, even when I looked at the piece on the video from the hearing, it wasn't a mass crowd. It was a little, it was decent. It wasn't even decent. There was only like about 25, 30 people. And one can make an argument, one can make the argument that each person represents so many people. Okay, you can make that argument. But the bottom line is, we shouldn't be in that position. We should never put ourselves in that position. He should have never, Dr. Umar should have never said anything about the so-called Contra stripper. He should never got into a tete-a-tete with Saru Seti. He should never have gotten into all of these things, because as a young person, he is the one that is, because I went to his presentation here in Atlanta on during Kwanzaa. It was Ujamaa, the fourth day of Kwanzaa. And at the Shrine of the Black Madonna here. And there was a great crowd. And a lot of the people there they had no idea about Kwanzaa, because when the sister said Baragani, they was like, huh? And I'm yelling out, Ujamaa, But but the deal is that he has that ear of the millennials and our young people. And there was some elders like myself in the audience as well. He has that. And he does say in his presence the right things. Now, the thing is this. What you say and what you do should be a match. It should be congruent in what, how, if I'm saying this, then my actions should speak that. But if I'm saying something and doing something other than that, then that, of course, can lead me to be, or to lead others to say that I'm a hypocrite. I'm a charlatan, because to me, you should always be, and I've always tried to be, Brother Muhammad, you know me for a long time, over some 30-some years, a man of my word,
And that's right. I bear witness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a level of commitment. And so I think that those of us in the conscious community who are striving desperately to help raise the conscience of our people and put us in the right direction, that's what we need to be. Because what begins to happen is that if it's not, then you see that same old. That's how they is. Let me just go back to doing what I've been doing and Lord help us. You know,
so
that situation, the problem with Ta-Nehisi Coates and Cornel West, and what happened with Cornel West and Tavis Smiley because they got dissed by Barack Obama, you know, so all of these little problems that individuals are having, I think that what should happen instead of playing them out in the media, particularly in the social media, you know, is sit down.
That's right.
Sit down public. Excuse me. Sit down privately. Come to some understanding. Mm-hmm. Then publicly, you know, face our people and say, hey, we may have some disagreements. We may sometimes disagree on certain things. But one thing we know for sure, that we're moving in the same direction. We may not, you know, take the same route, but we're moving in that same direction. You know,
I
think that's a lot of times what happens with, say, for instance, the minister and other conscious leaders, or what happened back in the day with Du Bois and Marcus Garvey or Booker T. Washington, all these things that the Caucasian could use to manipulate and continue to divide us and confuse the masses of our people and make a choice. Because I maintain that coming out of the 50s into the 60s, where brothers and sisters no longer were feeling Dr. King's message, because we kind of knew, like, that's me. I'm talking about me, not personally, but me coming out of that time, growing up in the 60s, like yourself, because we're about the same age, you know, embracing the Republic of New Africa, or embracing the Black Panthers, or embracing a nationalistic or cultural nationalist platform, you know, as opposed to integration, you know. And so I say that there became a fork in the road where our people were conveniently steered towards that mindset of integration and assimilation and social, and, you know, as opposed to self-actualization, independence, and consciousness. We were steered in that direction, you know.
Right.
And as a consequence, we felt that was going to happen, that was going to be a reality in the lives of African people, and we would be treated with respect and dignity, and we could go do with anything or go anywhere anybody else could. But of course, today, almost 50 years later, 50 years is a long time, Brother Muhammad. Almost 50 years later, we can still see today that is not the case. And my contention is, when are we going to give up begging and pleading? When are we going to give up and embrace the idea of doing for ourselves and begin to love and trust and respect and work with one another to make that happen? And not just here in this country, I'm talking about African people globally, because no matter where we are, we're getting dogged out. We're always at the low economic level because the idea of being Caucasian is an idea and a concept that has been planted into the minds of humanity, that is the best, that is the good, you know, to look this way, to have these kinds of amenities. That is the best. Because when Trump said Haiti and Africa, these shitholes, why are they talking about immigration and bringing people from these shitholes? You know, I don't usually talk about Donald Trump because I can give less than a damn about him, but I'm going to comment on this, you know, because of you got to understand why these places are shitholes, because of colonization, of racism. You got to understand why. But see, Caucasians want to believe that conditions in other places were their have less to their own desires, that happened to them because that's how they are. They don't give understanding to racism, colonialism. You know, they don't give understanding to that at all. They don't give an understanding.
No, not at all.
So they don't give understanding what happened in Haiti and how after those brothers and sisters fought a battle and kicked the French out and even defeated the British and the Americans, you know, they don't understand that. And they don't understand that since that time, Haiti has been punished ever since. They don't understand that time. And then even after the earthquake, with all of that devastation that happened to them, and I think it's been about almost 10 years since the earthquake, or coming up on 10 years, and the condition has still not been corrected. You know, so.
Well, brother, you know, I hear a lot of things in what you're saying. You know, first of all, with your answer to my question is, you know, different roads to get us there. You know, I remember one instructor said to me, there are at least 14 different highways and byways in and out of the island of Manhattan, New York City, between the bridges, the tunnels, the whatever it is. It's 14, you know, at that time, 14 different ways in and out of the same destination, if you will. And so certainly, you know, it would be to our advantage to say that even if your direction is different, as long as we get into the same destination, then that's a great thing.
That's right.
And then when you talked about the civil rights movement, and it reminded me of, you know, a lot of people just get locked in on the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King in 1963, I guess the March on Washington, but he lived to be 5 years beyond that. And so he, you know, made a particular evolution and revolution in his revelation. And so toward the end of his life, it was recorded that, you know, in a pensive look that he had at one time, it was the entertainer.
Harry Belafonte.
Oh, wow. Yes, sir.
Right.
So why are you looking like that, Dr. King? He says, I feel as though I'm integrating my people into a burning house.
That's right.
Because he began to realize after going through all that he went through, you know, it's not just, and Malcolm said it before he was assassinated, it's not just a civil rights, it's a human rights issue. And even though, as you had mentioned earlier, you know, they took the route of trying to make those who were in government more moral and more conscious, which they were neither moral nor conscious, but yes, because of political reasons, signed whatever bills they signed to even make way for us to, you know, have careers in that. But that was part of the trick, because after a while, in an effort to sacrifice ourselves fighting these politicians, we gave up all that we had in terms of having our own institutions like Tulsa, Oklahoma represented it, and the other 60 cities in America at that time that represented independence. We gave up our own hotels, gas stations, restaurants, and the need to do for self. And so I can't help but to think, you know, in addition to those two things, based on what you said, and I really appreciate it, and I hope your listening audience appreciated you walking us, you know, through that time period from Marcus to Marcus Garvey to Booker T. Washington to W.E.B. Du Bois and their journey toward the same destination, and making it applicable to what you're trying to tell this new generation that should be done. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan still lives amongst us, brother.
That's
and
right.
He represents the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who has taught do for self since, you know, the early 30s. And so when you talk about a man of integrity, you also have to look at the minister as being amongst the last men standing, if not the last man standing, representing that. And so I just wanted to share that to the conversation, brother, because you, in my humble opinion, you're right and exact. And again, back, I think the last part point you were making that I heard you state about these Caucasians not wanting to deal with why these countries are the way they are. Haiti is back to that cognitive dissonance. Huh?
That's right. That's right.
They refuse to see. We don't have nothing to do with that, but yet, you know, the same areas they're talking about that are of the low, of the dung, are the same areas that they came and got us, as you said, and have always said, not as enslaved human beings, but as scientists and architects and
yeah.
that which represented the highest level of society.
Yeah.
I thank you, Brother Oshie, for sharing that. I just wanted to, you know, respond to what
I appreciate that, Brother Muhammad.
Beautifully laid out for your yeah. audience, brother.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, I try my best to present the information based on the scholarly research of our scholars, our historians, you know, our elders,
that's right.
our ancestors, men and women who, without foundation money or grant money, reclaimed, recaptured, and restored the history of our people. Because just like you said, whether it was the Honorable Elijah Muhammad El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. Look at the history, and our problem is that we don't look at it. We continue to hold out hope, and plead and beg for change within these Caucasians to do right, act right, to treat us and respect our humanity. It hasn't happened. It ain't happening now, and it ain't going to happen. But yet and still, we still believe through voting, through legislation, through all of these methods that the Caucasians say that you should do, that somehow there will be some positive integration, some positive assimilation totally within a society. It hasn't happened, and it's not going to happen because it's not meant to happen in a society that is controlled by them. I went to a conference on racism in Milwaukee one time and at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And one of the things that I mentioned at that conference, I said the crux of the problem, the root of the problem is Caucasian men who are selfish and greedy, and they don't want to share. And I said that then, and I would say that even more so today, because it has been proven. It has been proven not just here in America, it has been proven globally, because Caucasians, Europeans, have developed a mindset that they must be in control. Now, Francis Crest Welsing said, because when they came out of that dark age, medieval age, land poor, resource poor, and people poor, they began to go around the world. And then they had intercourse or rape with the indigenous females where in those lands that they encountered, and saw that the offspring did not look like them. She says this caused an innate fear in them of genetic annihilation. And therefore, they had to control all the people they encountered. They had to physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, in any other way, control. Just like you mentioned earlier, she said that European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is in every facet of human life that they endeavor. Mm-hmm. So they have to control that. But yet, we feel as African people that somehow we can influence them to be humane. That we can talk to them and show them that we are just as human as they are, and that our humanity should be respected. And I keep saying, no, to hell with them. Stop trying to convince them. To hell with them. I'm a Pan-Africanist. And on this program, I talk about liberation, self-determination, independence, and sovereignty for African people. What sovereignty means is that nobody outside of us determines anything. We come together and we determine what is best for African people, what direction we're going to go and what we're going to do and the things that we need to control. The irony is, Brother Muhammad, is that we've been perceived as a poor people, the image of us. But yet on the continent of Africa, it has all of the resources that everybody wants,
think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for it. That's a Dr. John Henry Clark quote. But yet, that's the real. That's the real, because you look at China. China has no resources. China is in Africa. Japan has no resources. They're in Africa. Europe. Europe is wealthy. Europe is prominent. Europe did what it did because it raped Africa and continues to do so today, even after the so-called 60s, late 50s and 60s of independent countries. But yet, AFRICOM is there. The United States is there. All of them are still there.
Oh, yeah.
And then you can see the ignorance of the people by what the now president of Zimbabwe has done, giving land back to the Caucasian and talking about we should be a part of the British Commonwealth again. Oh, man, I was sick. Mm-hmm. I was sick. But that is the mentality. That's why I'm saying, Brother Muhammad, you know, whatever we have to do, we must do. And we must do it in the honor of the ancestors of our people, in the honor of our God. And I know that for many of us, that is a problem because of the theology. That's why, once again, the wisdom of El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz. Malik Shabazz said, when we come together to talk about how we're going to solve this problem, I'm not going to bring Islam, because Islam is my religious philosophy. And I know that you may have a different religious philosophy, and we may disagree to the point that we can't work together. So I'm going to keep my religion in my back pocket. And I hope you do the same with you have Christianity, more science, or whatever it is that you have, Seventh-day Adventist. Because the bottom line is we don't suffer because we're there, those religious philosophies. We suffer because we African people, we black people, and we need to come together to develop a plan of action for the salvation and liberation and self-determination and sovereignty of our people. And that's the bottom line. But yet and still, that's why I was speaking about what you asked me earlier about Umar Johnson and the conflicts that are happening that we definitely don't need, that need to be squashed. In fact, all of the so-called beefs that we're having need to be squashed, you know. And
no doubt about it. Yeah. No doubt about it. If we can't atone and, you know, forgive if necessary and reconcile our differences, then, you know, we have to really, again, back to self-improvement, check ourselves to see if we are even worthy of quote-unquote leadership or having someone follow what we say we believe in. You know, the other thing I'd like to add to the conversation is that when you talked about you being a pan-Africanist, you know, well, it was two things, twofold. When you talk about Africa and the resources and everybody raping that region of the world, politically, economically, devaluing the economic resources of the indigenous people in that part of the planet. Again, that's been the MO, motive operandi of these people who, you know, have deceived the whole world and believe in world dominance all along. But we just, you know, in a different time in 2018. But let us not forget that Muammar Gaddafi tried to unify the states, the countries of Africa from an economic and point of view first. But you see what happened to him.
Sure.
And so the other part I wanted to add was that, you know, as a pan-Africanist, one of the things as we try to get our act together, brother, you and I, we're no different than the ones who, you know, we identify as the least of these. You know, we have to constantly work on ourselves daily, because it's just a matter of a breath that we could possibly slip back into another level of consciousness that we know is not good for us and our psyche and our families and our empowerment. But, you know, because of this man who wants to, I mean, he's actually playing God. He wants to rule the whole world and has been doing that for the past 400 or 6,000 years, depending on your point of reference. But the Pan-Africanist is not only the human being, it's also the forces of nature. And you and I think have talked about it before. Have we ever noticed how the hurricanes?
Yes.
Begin off the west coast of Africa.
That's right.
And travel that same journey
That we traveled.
That many of us took across the Atlantic, that you in your libations talked about the African Holocaust, the Maiafa, the fact that the bones of our ancestors make up the carpet of the Atlantic Ocean.
That's right.
You see? And so one of the things that's is an indicator to this man who wants to control the world, be it here in the wilderness of North America, is the fact that we are being impacted by the forces of nature. That's the Creator telling them, okay, you think you God? Okay, well, handle this winter on the East Coast. Just last week,
yes,
whether it was Atlanta or Norfolk or up top, New Jersey, New York, Boston, handle this weather on the West Coast, where the greatest wildfires have taken place, and now because of the trees being burned up, the mudslides. Handle this weather, you see? And so I just wanted to add that on, because that's giving people another sign, too, that if you're not with that which is right, then you better get your act together or we out of here. But if you are with that which is right, then let us again stay humble and stay right, because again, those winds can easily blow us into another mindset, another condition, if you will, and we don't want to get caught up on that side. You know, victory is ours, brother.
That's right. We have to do
just what we've been doing, brother, to stay steadfast in this war, brother, because when you talk about war, first of all, you got to realize you in one.
That's right. You got to acknowledge that fact.
If you don't, you already a victim. You already a casualty.
Mm-hmm. You got to honor yourself.
But then when you realize you in it, then you got to realize, you know, where are you in that? You know, are you a soldier? You a warrior? You on the front lines? You know, you in the ranks? You on the flanks? What's your role in that? And so. Again, brother, that's why I thank you, brothers, for doing all that you do in terms of, you know, we don't talk about ourselves, and you put that title that we were blessed to have, me being a past president of the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters. Since we don't talk about ourselves, let me tell your listening audience, if they don't know, that I'm standing on your shoulders as, I believe you were you the fifth president?
Yes. I was the fifth president.
Right, of the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters. And so in that, I'm saying that to say, not to give either one of us accolades, I'm saying that to say that, first of all, honor to the ancestors, but also when you sit in a seat like that, you put yourself in position to know the war that we were in, not just putting out fires in the communities in which we served, but seeing that, you know, the fire department in America could be arguably one of the citadels of, you know, how do you define it? Not racism, but, you know, not white supremacy. How you define it, Brother Oshie? I know you got to.
Well, I define it like this. It is European Caucasian extremism. Racism,
right.
and privilege.
And so the fire department could be arguably one of the institutions in America that stands out front as that.
Exactly.
So my point is, when you were the president, when I was the president, we were in positions to be like generals of an army just to navigate ourselves through a institution and an industry that didn't want us there.
That's right.
And so we thank God for the ancestors that, you know, and you so beautifully, brother, when you were the president, was able to connect us globally.
Exactly.
Africa and to the UK.
Well,
and to the Caribbean.
Well, I took that international piece seriously, I guess. Because I knew it was
brother. Right, that's right. That's right. It was for you to do, brother.
Yeah.
I bear witness, brother. Yeah. You know, we love telling the history. And you're not going to take it, you know, and speak on it. Let me tell it. Yes, sir. You did take it seriously,
yes,
brother.
I
did. And you did connect with Chief Gazi of Ghana.
Yes.
And in fact, I was looking through a photo album the other day, and I saw when he first came to the United States, he came through JFK Airport, and Brother John Ruffins, who is now an ancestor, and myself received him and another brother whose name I can't recall right now.
It was Douglas.
At the airport before, you know, they made it down to EDI. So,
right.
Yeah, brother.
Well, listen, Muhammad, I want you to, I'm going to take a break. I want you to hold on. We have another caller. I'm just going to take a brief break. And
well, let me fall back, brother. I don't want to take up any more time, brother Oshi. I just wanted to call, brother, give you a kiss and a hug, brother.
Oh,
and
well,
brotherly love.
Oh, man, you know? I appreciate that.
Thank
I respect
you for
that.
Letting, you know, be your brother.
Always. And I'll be listening to see this afternoon. I'll be listening, okay?
All right, soldier. Be blessed.
All right. Thank you, Brother Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum. Walaikum assalam. That's my good friend and brother, Brother Joseph Muhammad, formerly of Mosque Number 7 in New York. Good brother, now resides in Norfolk, Virginia. Me and Brother Muhammad have traveled the highways and byways with the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters, going to conferences and convention, trying to our best to make fire departments reflect the cities that they serve, but more importantly, making the brothers and sisters in the fire service a conscious group of individuals and organizations that truly will serve our community, not just to try to get us on the job, keep us on the job, and get us promoted, by helping our brothers and sisters in the community who are less fortunate than ourselves. And I really thank him. We're going to take a break. I got another caller, so just hang with me. I'm going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You are listening to Power from the Earth, Wind, and Fire album, Last Days in Time, which is one of my favorite Earth, Wind, and Fire albums and one of my favorite songs. I love instrumentals. You'll be hearing some from time to time. I bring back some memories for you. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And, of course, our number is 215-490-9832. And, of course, remember the other lineups that we have tonight. We have Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard tonight at 7 p.m. on Fridays. And then tomorrow, Troy Wilmore with Sports Talk from 10 to 12 Eastern. Dr. Rogers will be on soon. I don't know about tomorrow on Time for an Awakening, but we have on Sunday Sister POC with Revive from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then, of course, Sunday evening, Time for an Awakening with Brother Richard and Brother Elliot at 7 p.m. We have a caller, 646. Good
He's
afternoon.
Not ready to go, but I'm ready yet.
Good afternoon, caller. Good afternoon, caller. Good afternoon, caller.
Oh, hold tough, Brother Ochi. How are you today, my good brother?
Brother Jay, I am doing fine. It's always glad to hear your voice. Always glad to hear that you're out there listening and always, more importantly, willing to call in and contribute. Appreciate you, man. Doing
hey,
fine.
Hey, listen, brother, you know the nut job that's down there in Washington calling, you know, Haiti a shithole. You know, I ain't mad at him. Because it basically is a shithole. And the reason why it is a shithole is because of the American policies and
exactly.
the French policies towards Haiti. So,
exactly.
I mean, if the truth be told, call it what it is. I mean, the reality is this. Haiti could be a much better place if the people who come to America don't become so damn Americanized and go back home and build up their nation
yeah.
like we supposed to do over in Africa.
That's right.
You know what I'm
That's
saying?
Right.
Because if the truth be told, most of their best talents come to America. That's the thing that nut job doesn't realize. You know, he's talking about he want people from Norway, Asia, and other places like that to come here. Because the thing is, most people that come to this country send their best. And in the process, what they usually do is build up America, and then some of them go home, and some of them stay here because they caught up into whiteness.
Yeah.
Now, the thing with Haiti is a lot of them choose not to go back home and do the necessary things to build up the country. They waiting for the white boy to build it up and to donate and do all those things, when the reality is, if they do it, they're just doing it to control the resources. Kick their behinds out. You struggling already. Continue to struggle and build. That's the only way you're going to build up your nation. But no, we don't look at it that way. We just want to get all caught up in whiteness. So, look, man, I ain't sympathetic about that situation because I've worked with Haitians, and I could tell you, they love to talk politics, man. But they, like I always used to tell them when I had to beat up on them, you're always talking American politics and Haitian politics, but you never do nothing to kick that cracker out of your country and build up your country. You're always looking for assistance from that devil. And that devil ain't doing nothing but exploiting you. And I know Haitians that have come here, made money, gone back home and built businesses, but collectively, their whole agenda is that French nonsense and that American nonsense. Yeah. So, you know, because their country is in this situation, that's because they're not coming together and dealing on a collective of being independent from that cracker. So, man, I'm not getting caught up in it. And that, you know, I think we need to come to the conclusion and understand as black folks here in this country, this is a white man's country. This is a white man's country. That clown has the right to do what he's doing because he's preserving whiteness. You know what I mean? Why can't we realize that I don't care how much success you have, how much wealth you gain, you still go be a nigger in the eyes of the cracker? Look at Ben Carson. As much success as that man has in his so-called position that he has in this administration, don't you think all those Yorugos think of him as nothing more than a nigger?
Yeah.
They don't respect him.
No. No,
and
they
then
don't.
And then you wonder why we in this situation. We in this situation because of the simple fact, like I said the other day to you, we have no community. So when you go and vote for this cracker, you're not going to get anything for your vote. The only thing you're going to get for your vote is trying to be closer to that cracker and trying to be a part of what he's about. That's it. You're not getting anything in return because you have no community to get anything in return for. If I vote for someone, place them in office, and you expect them to give something back, where are they giving it back to?
Yeah.
Who are they? They're not giving it back to an individual. They may help one or two people, you know, and that's just the nature of the Negro. He looking for that closeness to that cracker, and he go help the cracker that love him the most.
Yeah.
But the reality is he's not giving nothing back to black people because you have no community to receive nothing.
No, no, we don't. We're very fragmented. We're very divided. And the fact is that we are in a position to make to change situations, not in this country, mind you. All I mean in terms of elections, that was witnessed a number of times. In fact, you can look at Barack Obama. If only Caucasians voted in 08 and 12, Barack Obama would not have won either time. He'd have lost big. But because of us, that put him in office. It's the same thing with Doug Jones in Alabama. If only Caucasians would have voted, Roy Moore would have won. But those sisters came out.
And in the process, what do you get? What
nothing.
Do you get in return?
Not a damn thing. Vote? Not a damn thing.
Not a damn thing. But thinking that you included in a system that's a system that's trying to oppress you and dominate you. How stupid are you? In order to receive something, you have to have a base in order to receive the benefits of your vote. So in order to do that, you need to build communities.
Yeah.
If you don't build communities, you're just giving your vote away. You're giving your vote away to a person who's going to use his position to oppress you.
That's why.
Barack Obama never did nothing for black folks.
No, not
who
directly.
What did he do for?
No,
he
not
did,
directly.
He did something from the transgender because what did they have? They had a community.
No, he didn't
they
do anything.
They had a base.
Yeah.
They had something in position to receive the give back.
No,
or as James Brown would say, the payback. We don't have that. So all you're doing is voting to put someone in office who you feel won't be as oppressive to you as the other cracker. But the problem is, you still being oppressed.
Yeah.
Because you have nothing in place to receive any benefit for your vote. Negroes can't understand that.
No.
And that's why we're not winning the way we should be. We need to, at this point in time, honestly, divorce ourselves from this political situation and build communities to where as we have control and we are functionally in charge of them. Until we do that, we're going to keep on going around this cycle. But the thing is, we're not looking at what's happening with other people. Other people have what? Community. Chinatown. Little Italy. Cuba. Cubans are the perfect example of what I'm talking about, what they've been able to do in Miami. But we don't understand that, because all we do, once we are identified as having some sort of skill or talent, is give it to the white man, and then in the process, the white man pays you, and in the process, you go live next to him, you go want all of his trinkets that he has, and you could deem yourself and consider yourself successful and integrated in society. Where basically, whenever they want to take it away from you, they could take it away from you. Just look what they did to that Urugu, Harvey Weinstein, and some of them other crackers that they what you call them, doing their thing to. Out of all of those crackers that caught up in this Me Too situation, you know, the only one that I've seen fight back, and it seems like may be able to weigh off of this and be able to sustain his semi position, if you look at what's going on and our people ain't really recognizing it, is Tavis Smiley.
Right.
I don't know if you noticed that he's slowly being able to rebuild his media empire. Why? Right. Because he challenged them. Because he realized that he had to fight. And then what did he do? He scaled down, he changed direction, and he went to, I guess, the Word Channel, and he went to some other outlets that was available to him, and he's trying to rebuild this thing. But if you look at all of the others, they've absolutely, in a sense, been crushed. And now, will they recover? Who knows? And in the process, you know, everybody's now scared. So, I mean, we just don't understand, brother, our position and who we're dealing with. And we are now caught up with this nut man in Washington. I mean, he's just doing what he's supposed to do.
Yeah.
He's supposed to uplift
this society of whiteness. Well, see, I think, Jay, that's the problem for us, is that we think that the president of the United States is supposed to be an individual who espouses all the things and promotes all the things that America says it's about. You know, a democracy, a freedom, justice, equality, all these, you know, terms that are used that have never been truly implemented in a society dominated and controlled by Europeans. Because the bottom line is, they are selfish, and number one, they're very hardcore patriarchal. They don't like women, okay? And you see, in fact, European culture is rape culture.
No question.
You know, and so they are selfish, they are greedy, and they don't want to share. And as a consequence, anything that comes up that looks like somebody outside of themselves are doing okay, then there's going to be Caucasian backlash.
They're going to attack.
They'll be on attack.
Think about this. The contradiction of this Urugu is as plain as day with this whole thing with Russia. But we don't get it. Because, see, the reality is what they accuse Russia of doing to America,
America's been doing it.
Do it all over the damn world.
All over the world.
So
been doing
how is it? How is it you can't be treated in the same fashion that you treat the world? That right there is the total contradiction of who and what you are. That's being nothing more than a hypocrite.
Of course.
But here it is. You got all these Negroes all caught up into this. Feeling as though they've been violated and all of these things, man.
Yeah.
Negroes talking about, I'm a Pan-African, but pushing a European agenda on satellite radio every day, man.
Yeah.
This Mark Thompson, man. I don't know. It didn't have the nerve to have an African name.
Mark
Thompson.
You know
what I'm saying?
Yeah. Huh? Oh, I think I know. In fact, you know what? I've mentioned that, Brother Jay, many times.
Yeah, Masamune or Fumi or something like that. He on Sirius Radio every day pushing his nonsense, talking about the Democratic Party.
Right.
Take over. And then he got the nerve to talk about he a damn Pan-African. Oh, man.
No.
That just tightens me up, man. How could you be a Pan-African pushing European domination?
Yeah, he's a big promoter of the Republican Party. I've seen him.
No, the Democratic Party.
I mean,
not the Republican Party.
I apologize.
The Democratic
You're
Party.
Right. The Democratic, I apologize. You're right. Big promoter of the Democratic Party. I've seen him in various other things. And I often said this, Jay, that is there a program that espouses independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people on Sirius Radio or XM Radio or satellite radio? And if it is, correct me. No, it isn't. No, it isn't.
No. The only closest thing you get to any type of cultural independent radio is the Carl Nelson Show.
Right.
That's the only the only one. Other than that, no. You may find some people on the internet that do it, you know. But no. Carl Nelson is the only show. Ain't nobody on Sirius Radio talking about African independence, man. Yeah. That would be a no-no.
No.
That would be a no-no.
Right.
And you're not going to hear it on terrestrial radio really too tough anyway. I mean, look at who some of the biggest radio people are. Someone like Coon Daddy, Perm Daddy, Al Sharpton. That Negro there is another disgrace to Africanness. That's something that they promote. Someone like him and some of the others, the jokey jokesters like Joyner and the rest of them, who think they're making some sort of
Steve Harvey
statement every now and then. But basically, all they do is just joke, shuffle, and all of that. So, I mean, the reality is that we can't be getting mad at this Urugu because he says Haiti is a shithole country, and he talks about other places. I mean, the truth is, what you have to be able to do is to define why they are shithole country,
right.
And the reason for it is because of the policies of the United States and France, and the inability of the Haitian people to want to be independent and separated from this cracker. That's the honest truth of the matter. So how could you get mad at this devil? The devil being who he is. He's a white nationalist. And listen, this is a white man's country.
Yes,
so I'm not getting mad at him for being a white nationalist. Okay, what we have to do is get our act together. Do our thing, build our situation, and then address it and deal with it and keep moving forward.
Right on,
Jay. We're not doing that. We're caught up in trying to be loved by our rapists. That's all we're trying to do. We just trying to it's like we want to feel good.
Right.
Make me feel good. You remember from Monster Ball when Halle Berry was saying, make me feel good.
Yeah.
Make me feel good. Why?
Wow.
Because she's in pain.
Yeah.
And she feels as though the love of the oppressor
and the executioner
will make her feel better.
And the executioner of her husband in the movie. And that's a deep thing. That's a deep thing.
And that is the same interreaction that we as African people have with this Urugu.
That's right. Well, Jay, I appreciate it, man.
It's just the reality.
Yep.
Because we don't want to see him for who he is because of the trinkets that he give us and that we are able to deem as being somewhat inclusive or inclusionary into his wickedry.
That's right.
So he's beating us.
Well,
he's not doing certain things to us that we don't feel threatened. But the reality is he's doing it in a subliminal way and he's still hurting and destroying our people. Yeah.
Well, he does it. He does it subliminally and overtly.
Right.
I got some other callers. I'm going to get these other callers. You want to hang
on? Hotep, brother.
Hotep did, Brother Jay. Have a blessed and wonderful weekend. All right. We got a caller, us. 267.
Hey, good afternoon, Brother Oshie. I'm just going to keep you real short. You know, it was some things that Brother Jay said that I absolutely agree with him. We spent entirely too much time talking about the oppressor. What we really, I believe, and I think you do a good job of it, we have to get our thinking right. First of all, like you and the Brother Muhammad was talking about, we are in a war, regardless of who we stand in line to vote for. And, you know, a lot of our people are fooled, and they call me and people like you, they call us sellouts and nuts because because we don't put too much faith in something that's been oppressing us for 400 years plus. So I agree with Brother Jay. I would love to, like, stop talking about this. If we know how he is, then let it be. You know what I mean? Let's get us right. Because I see, I got a little, my family and some Facebook friends, and I see them, and I'm real kind with some of my posts to them. You know, but when I started seeing the Oprah Winfrey post start coming up, for president, you know, brother, I said, if there was one notorious black male, straight black male hater since the 80s, it's that wench. And, excuse my French, but it's her. She stirred up so much anti-black male, anti-straight black male rhetoric back then, man. I mean, it's a disgrace. I remember Whitney Houston said to her one time when she wanted to just trash Bobby Brown. And Whitney Houston said to her, said, look, I'm no angel myself. I come from East Orange, New Jersey. So that shut that woman right up. But she wanted to, like, show, well, she was feeding on that white media thing. Let's bash this black male. And Brother Oshie, I don't know if you see it coming, but it's coming.
Yeah.
And it's and they're working on our women right now. Yeah. I mean, I've been around this earth about 6 years less than you. And I notice the trends, and I see when they start. Right now, there is a dividing wedge between us and the female, and they're trying to go in with it right now.
Well,
they're trying. Go ahead.
There's always been a divide and conquer by those who want to maintain the privilege and power that they have. There's always been a divide and conquer, and particularly because they understand that the unit of our African family is the strongest unit, and so we must keep that divided. We must keep them fractionalized. We must keep them at each other. And so, therefore, many of our brothers, unfortunately, want to be with Caucasian women or any other women but our women. But they sister, but they mama who bore them, you know, which is an embarrassment and a damn shame to me. But that's the reality that we're dealing with, brother Ralph, you know. And
brother,
so, therefore, they're going to keep that fraction going.
I know some brothers, I use that term loosely, that all they deal with is Caucasian women. And the thing about it, one of them told me, dude messed this chick over. She take care of him. She dress him. And this brother, like, mid-40s, man. And he does mess this chick over because, you know. But he's telling me, like, her family don't like him. They calling him nigga, and they doing this and they doing that to him. I said, but, bro, I said, see, the thing is, yeah, we know how they are. But what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? You know what I mean? I mean, come on, man. We're gonna have to get our heads out of our asses and realize we just can't walk on people. You're not uplifting yourself by trying to marry this woman. You know, I mean, come on, man. And, you know, I get so frustrated with us and our thinking. Now, I love dark-skinned sisters, but some of these dark-skinned sisters, man, if you hear them talking behind closed doors, you swear it was a Caucasian woman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I remember me and my wife was eating, and we sitting there, and I thought it was two young white college girls talking behind us. Man, when we got up to leave, and I looked,
yeah.
I said, oh, my
I know,
God.
Brother. We have a tough struggle ahead of us, but it must be a struggle, because without struggle, there is no progress. Brother Ralph, I appreciate your call, man. I got some other calls I'm going to get to.
Go ahead, brother. Talk appreciate, to you later. Oh, have man, a good one.
Have a good weekend, brother. Peace to you. 919. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshie. Hotep.
Oh, Hotep. Dr. Bruce Bridges, brothers and sisters. Dr. Bridges, how you doing, sir?
I'm all right. I've been listening and holding for a while, and you had some good callers in, and just kind of wanted to comment on the Haiti situation and
sure.
the Trump situation. One thing for sure that Brother Jay said that was very good, or you said it, I don't know, but either way, it has to be put in a historical context as to why Haiti is as it is, why all the 50 or so countries in Africa are as they are, and why China and India and everywhere and South America and the Isles of the Caribbean and the USA, wherever Caucasian people have gone, they have done the same thing.
Yeah.
So what we're looking at, when we look at the condition and the situation that we're in, and this is not to make an excuse, but when we look at the conditions and the situations of people of color around the earth, we're looking at the result of what has happened. We're not looking at the root of it.
Right.
We haven't put it historic. We're looking at the root. But when you go back to the root, the very person who's talking about us and calling us the kinds of things that Trump called us, they are the problem from the beginning. I listen to the BBC a lot, British Broadcasting Network, because they give world news.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're in Africa and India and China and questioning people. I'm always thinking, when you're asking the questions about the underdevelopment and the famine and the problems that are found in the Caribbean, such as Haiti, the one who's asking the questions are the problem.
Yeah, you're right.
The problem is right there.
And right there.
And until we recognize that, as Brother Jay said, recognize that and work on ourselves, then we'll never understand it. That's a problem.
Really?
They started the problem.
That's right. And they
so
continue.
It's like Malcolm said, we're blaming it. We're the victims of all this mess, man.
Mm-hmm.
Malcolm said it. They put it right. So until you understand
it. We're the victims of it. We're the victims of
it,
but yet we blame ourselves for the situation. We have never put the blame where it squarely belongs, and that's what I do. I don't blame ourselves for what happens with us, the ignorance we display towards one another, the disrespect, the self-hatred. I don't never blame it. I put the blame where it squarely belongs, at the root of the problem, and that is European, Caucasian, extremism,
exactly.
Racism, and privilege. They are the problem. You know,
that's the point I wanted to make, Brother Oshie. In all our conversations, I haven't heard the whole program, but that's where we got to put it squarely right in his face and let him know, okay, if this is what you're calling us, how did we become this way? What happened?
Yeah.
If you see me with my pockets turned inside out with no money, and then I got robbed last night, and then the man who robbed me is looked at and respected as a rich man, he robbed me. That's why he's rich. I'm not deprived. He is a person who actually produced the problem, created the problem, and he is the source of it, and he is the reason that we are the way that we are. Now, that's not to say that we can't change it, and this is why I agree with one of the other callers that we have to understand that, put it in its perspective, and do what it is we have to do. But don't feel bad about, you know, what's going on, you know, and what Trump said, because they're the ones who did it. They try to blame us. And let's go back to another thing, going back to my book, Recapturing the African Mind. The brother talked about Haiti. Brother Day talked about the Haitians. These Haitians who come over here are totally endowed with a French mentality. They are endowed with
yes.
that French culture. They're endowed with Pierre Cardin and French poodles, and endowed with croissants and French food and everything. And they have lost their minds by listening to the French.
Yes.
So when they come here and talk politics of American politics, that's what they have been taught to do, because they have been that's what they've been taught. Ocean, that's all they know.
Yeah.
You know. So until we get our minds back and begin to study our history and understand what's going on, then we'll never get it straight. That's the main point I want to make, brother.
Well, that's why I think your book is most important and very relevant, and that is to reclaim the African mind. This program, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, is dedicated, committed to helping to reclaim, recapture, restore the African mind. Because we are at war. We're at the war for the minds of our people. And who's going
and
to win this war? Go ahead.
And once we get our, minds back, Brother Osher, like you said, and begin to think, as Brother Jay was talking about, understanding our history and their history, our history, and the culture that we came out of, and grab back, do the Sankofa, grab back, go back and reach back for it, and put ourselves back in a different position, we'll never do it. And when we don't know our history, then we don't know what to do, and that's the problem. We don't know our history.
No.
This is why the first thing they destroyed was our history.
Well, you know, I think that they destroyed it, but it's there. It is there.
Yeah,
for
no question. Yeah, no question. Oh, thank you. Yes, sir. It's definitely there. But we got to Sankofa. We got to reach back.
That's right. We got to go back and fetch it.
Yeah, we got to reach back. Right.
You know?
Like the bird, the Sankofa bird. Go
That's
back
right.
and get it. And if you remember the movie Sankofa, since y'all mentioned Monster Ball today, and you mentioned another movie, I can't remember what. But anyway, when you go back and look at that movie, you see how that sister was transformed in the movie once she reached back and understood who she was.
Right. You remember she was a model with all the wigs and so forth. But once
but
that spirit of Sankofa.
She got rid of those wigs and stuff when she realized and all
right.
that fake hair and all those fingernails and all that stuff when she realized who she was.
Mm-hmm.
And so that reminds me of Fela. When Fela came here, he came here playing jazz music from Nigeria until he met a sister out in the West Coast who was a member of the Black Panther Party, and she asked him, "Why are you over here trying to play jazz? Why don't you play your own African music? You came from great cultures, great civilizations, Ghana, Mali, Songhai. You built the Nok culture. You've done all this." And he said to her, you know what he said? He said, "That's BS."
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying the way he said it. I'm the way Trump said it today, but he used the same word Trump did.
Yeah.
He said, "That's BS." He didn't even believe it until he read the autobiography of Malcolm X.
That's right.
And that turned him around. So until we reach back and put a different kind of thinking in our heads and get rid of a lot of this foolishness, I'm out riding while I'm talking to you. But I told this sister I'm helping move today.
Okay.
I got to call Brother Ocean's show. But I'm riding by and I'm passing black people. Got Christmas trees laying on the side of the road. They done spent $7,500 on these Christmas trees. Now they're on the side of the street.
That's right. To be picked up by the garbage man. But that's the mentality, because we have been impacted by them. They have imposed boundaries on us, and yet because we don't reach back and fetch it, because we don't embrace our culture, our history, our understanding, we go along to get along. You know, we hope and pray.
We go along to get along.
Yep.
That's exactly right. And we get to a point to where you can't go along to get along. You know, But anything that you see that the hands of men or women have produced, you have to remember that it started in their mind. There's no action that you see happening here in the material that didn't first start with the mental. That's where we got to go back and recapture that mental state of mind, and then we can become a better people in the world. The Haitians got to realize that they ain't French. They got to understand that they're African. French were the colonizers. The French were their oppressors.
Yes.
The French were the gangsters that came in and put them to work on those plantations and took everything from them.
Yes.
And I'm going to make one other point that I'm going to let you go. That there's something, too, to be said, even though he wasn't good. I'm not saying that. We need some beneficent dictators.
Right.
When Duvalier was in power, the government was stable. Now, there were problems. I'm not saying that. But some of our people need some dictators to say that this is how it's going to be, whether you like it or not. And if you can't follow it, then we got a drop squad to come visit you and to take you off somewhere and to do what we need to do to you to make you stop this foolishness.
Well, I'm down. Hey, I'm down with benevolent dictators. That's what Muammar Gaddafi was. He was a benevolent dictator.
He was a dictator. He was a dictator. Saddam Hussein was a dictator.
Yeah.
But look at Iraq today.
Yep.
And look at what Iraq was then.
Yep.
And you see some of the people are beginning to say, well, dog, we bring America in here and things will be better. And get rid of Hussein.
Yeah.
Now some of them are praying, wish they had Hussein back.
Yeah, it's the same.
So, you know.
Well, it's the same in Libya. It's the same in Libya.
Same in Libya.
You know?
And look, and another good example, I'm going to use this example because I heard a special on him the other night. Thomas Sankara from Burkina Faso,
yes.
West Africa.
Yes.
Same thing.
Same thing, man. And
so anyway,
of course,
Brother Ocean, I'm going to say Hotep to you.
Well,
I'm
listen,
always with you. And you know, I may not call you back, but I know you want me to call you, so I'm with you.
Okay, well, listen, I need you and Dr. Rogers to come on the program again so we can have another doctor's forum, okay? Let's do that next week.
Let's do that. Maybe what we say we're going to do it once a month, Ray Rout, maybe at the end of the month.
Let's do it.
Let me know.
I sure will, Doc. Thank you.
Hotep,
thank you so much.
Hotep
to you, brother.
Brother Ocean, Hotep to all your listeners. I hope they got something out of what I have to say. And I hope that the Creator will bless them with the light of understanding. Hotep.
Hotep. Ashe. Thank you, Dr. Bruce Bridges, the author of Recapturing and Reclaiming the African Mind. And that's what we definitely need to do. That's what's important. I did get a chance to go off into that piece that I wanted to go off into about Trump and what he had to say in an article that was from. But bottom line is, you know, because usually, like I said, I don't really talk about it, but the bottom line is the conditions are what they are globally is because of European, Caucasian extremism, European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. And that's why the situation is what it is. And when you talked about Haiti, it's a damn shame that they made Haiti pay reparations to France. We've been talking about reparations for what happened to us, and ain't nobody paid us a damn dime. But yet Haiti was made to pay reparations to France. And when France lost some of its stolen land in Africa, they tore up stuff. They tore up buildings and so forth. To hell with the French. That's why it angered me what happened to France. Now, understand this. I don't want anything bad to happen to anybody. But when something bad happens to somebody who was an oppressor, when something happens bad to somebody who has shown over a period of time that they've been devious and dogmatic in their behavior to other people in other countries, and it happens to them, it's karma. What goes around comes around. And people had the French colors on their Facebook pages and all this stuff. To hell with the French. It's not like I said, I don't want anything to happen bad to anybody. But when stuff happens bad to us and it continues to do it, it continues to happen, who feels bad about our situation? A lot of times, not even us, because we've been trained not to feel bad about each other, to only think of yourself as an individual, to only what's good, what's in it for me, how can I get mine, how can I get over? Brothers and sisters, we have much work to do. We have much work to do. And my contribution is trying to help us understand the dynamics of what's happening to us as African people. And I'll be here as often as I can. And I hope that the Creator, I hope that God and the spirit of our ancestors continue to bless me, motivate me, inspire me, and guide me. Because like I said, I'm not giving you my perspective, because my perspective is profane. I'm giving you information based on a scholarly research by our scholars, our historians, our ancestors, our elders, our contemporaries, brothers and sisters who understand that we must come together, close ranks, pool resources, and do for ourselves. Come together with the brothers and sisters on the continent. Come together with the brothers and sisters in the diaspora to do for ourselves. Brothers and sisters, Stephen Biko said the most potent weapon
in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because Africa has the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for it. Shemhotep, go in peace. Asante Sana, thank you. Have a blessed and wonderful weekend, family. Peace.